Cliff Goldstein here. Many people remember the Columbine High School massacre occurred April 20th, 1999 at Columbine High School in Colorado. A couple of these punks, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, basically blew away 12 students and a teacher, injured 24 others before they eventually just put the gun on themselves. Now, as expected, when something like this would happen, there was this time of national self-loathing. How could this happen? How could something like this? Well, you know, I don't know. I'm a pretty simple guy. And I got this crazy idea in my head that maybe the fact that so many Americans kill each other with guns might have something to do with the fact that so many Americans own guns. Now, of course, though, people didn't want to hear that. No, that had nothing to do with it. And the minute that some people were talking about some kind of gun control, Charlton Heston gets on the phone, calls Washington, D.C., and it's squelched. That's what I love about America. All the democracy money can buy. Now, of course, if it's not going to be guns that are responsible for people shooting people, yeah, I know guns don't kill people, people do, and on and on and on. They had to come up with some reason for this happening. Well, a bunch of Christians in America said they knew why it happened. It's because kids don't pray in school anymore. Yes, it's because the Supreme Court in June of 1963, by a 7-2 decision, kicked God out of public schools. Yes, it was on a Thursday when they did that. God got kicked out. And they can even graph it. Oh, you can get their material, and they'll show you. From the moment they kick God out of public school, they can graph more teen pregnancies, more abortion, more drug use, and on and on and on, all because they kick God out of public schools. Now, that's a nice theory, except there's only one problem with it. Is my understanding is that in the early years of the Third Reich, all those little kinder, they were praying to God in school. Every day the little kids were praying to God in school, and boom, what do you know? If all those little kids didn't grow up to be, or a bunch of them didn't grow up to be Nazis anyway. So I don't think praying in school solves the problem. Well, others said it's because the Ten Commandments. We took the Ten Commandments off the public schools. That's why the killing happened. And oh, I'm sure that makes so much sense. I don't have a doubt in my mind that if Klebold and Harris walked into the library and saw "Thou shall not kill" over the library wall, they would have put their Glocks and their Uzis or whatever they had in their lockers, and they would have gone back to a music appreciation class or something like that. Well, anyway, amid all these other reasons, how did this happen? You hear the name, it was because the kids read Nietzsche. Yes, the 19th century philosopher Nietzsche, that Harris and Klebold, I doubt very much these kids read Nietzsche, but they said, oh, they had read Nietzsche, and therefore that inspired them to go on this rage. Well, poor Nietzsche, he gets blamed for a lot of things. And then there was a famous 1924 murder case in America. Nathan Leopold and Richard Leob were sons of these millionaires. And just for a joke, or just for the fun of it, they murdered some 12-year-old boy, Bobby Franks. I think basically they did it for kicks. That was it. And it would have been the perfect crime, except I think Leopold dropped his glasses. Dropped his glasses, and his glasses were found. And now these two were actually the sons of multimillionaires. And they were caught, they were tried, they were convicted. And the question was, would they get the death sentence? Would they give Leopold and Leob the death sentence? Well, the parents, as I said, were these multimillionaires, and they hired Clarence Darrow, probably, you know, the most famous lawyer in America. And Darrow comes in and tried to blame circumstances. Oh, the mama didn't breastfeed him long enough, or Nathan didn't have a loving dad, and on and on and on, you know, to try to blame their environment. And then at one point, too, trying to save these kids' lives, Darrow said that it's because they were reading Nietzsche. You're gonna hang these kids because they read Nietzsche? Well, apparently it worked. They didn't get the death penalty. They went to prison for the rest of their lives. I think Leopold eventually got out 34 years later, moved to Puerto Rico, and on and on. But again, the point in all that, though, is when so often when bad things happen and people do bad things, you go on and on and on. You're talked, you know, it's all blamed on Nietzsche. Nietzsche was even at one point viewed as the philosopher of the Nazi Party, which is really many ways very, very absurd. I mean, Nietzsche, it's kind of an interesting story here. Nietzsche had a sister who married in the 1800s, you know, one of guy named Bernard Foster, you know, probably Germany's most outspoken anti-Semite. Now, Nietzsche hated the guy. He hated Foster. And her husband went off to Paraguay to start some Aryan German colony there. He committed suicide. She came back, took care of Nietzsche in his old age, got control of his writings, and worked them in to fit into Nazi ideology. And now, let me say, Nietzsche, though he's hardly someone's Eid philosophy, I agree with, as we'll see, Nietzsche was not a Nazi. He would have hated Hitler and everything Hitler stood for. Yet he's been dubbed the philosopher to the Nazi party. In one place, Nietzsche, in one of his writings, said something, "I'm having all anti-Semite shot." So he's obviously, he wasn't somebody that could really fit in with the Nazis. But now the question is, who was this guy Nietzsche? What did he teach? Why is he blamed for all these things? I said, this killing and that killing and on and on and on. Everybody all comes back to Nietzsche. Now, I think the answers are important because Nietzsche touched on some issues that really get to the heart of what it means to be human. And I think we can learn some good lessons from the thing he's written. Not that we necessarily have to agree, as you'll see, I don't. But he was very good at pointing out some things that I think, questions that I think we all should pay attention to. Now, Nietzsche was a German. He was born in 1844. His father was a Lutheran pastor. And in fact, Nietzsche, interestingly enough, came from a long line of pastors. And the funny thing about it is when he was young, he was kind of a very pious young man. And I want to read you, a quote from Nietzsche when he was young. Because most people are very surprised that here was Friedrich Nietzsche. And here's something that he wrote. "I have already experienced so much joy and sorrow, cheerful things, sad things. But in everything God has safely led me as a father leads his weak little child. I have firmly resolved within me to dedicate myself forever to his service." So that was Nietzsche. And that was his piety. Well, I got to say, though, unfortunately, it didn't last long. And by the time he was in his early 20s, influenced by higher criticism and the lot, Nietzsche threw out his faith completely. Indeed, he didn't just become a non-believer. He became a vowed enemy of Christianity. And I want to read you a quote from Nietzsche, what he calls, what he says about Christianity. Here was a young guy who he read a little while longer. This is what he said, and now this is what he says. He says, "I call Christianity the one great curse, the one innermost great corruption, the one great instinct of revenge, for which no means is poisonous, stealthily subterranean, small enough. I call it the one immortal blemish of mankind." So this is a preacher's kid now. So anyway, there's a long story how that happened, nobody knows. And on one level, Nietzsche's life was really kind of uneventful. He studied philology, got a good job when he was quite young, and probably would have spent his life as a teacher, but his bad health forced him to leave. And he kind of spent the rest of his days wandering around Europe, going from spa to spa, trying to get help. And he would get these vicious headaches you read about it that would last for days. And I mean, he was definitely a sick man. And there wasn't much of a social life there. Supposedly he had intimate relations one time and caught syphilis from it. Tough luck. And that probably eventually Nietzsche went insane, and some think that the syphilis brought the insanity on. And it's funny because when you read him, though, as you're going to see, it's really hard to tell, you know, which is the brilliant Nietzsche and which is the insane Nietzsche, because sometimes it's not that easy to tell the difference. Well, Nietzsche, according to the story goes, in January 1989, Nietzsche had his mental collapse. According to the story, he was in Italy, and he saw some horse being whipped by his master, and Nietzsche ran up and threw his arm around the horse to defend the horse, and then collapsed in the street, and that was his last sane moment. He lived for about 11 more years, just kind of in and out of mental illness at all but incapacitated him. He was so totally out of it that he couldn't exist on his own. It was institutionalized, or his family took care of him until he died. But now, again, I ask the question, who was this guy? Who was this guy? He didn't live that long. His last 10 years were consumed by mental illness. What did he write that was so influential? Read today, talked about today, analyzed, his influence, philosophy has influenced so many 20th century thinkers, and even into the 21st century, he's being read. There's whole courses on him. I even have a series of tapes that I listen to by a man and wife, Nietzsche scholars. I mean, who knows how many PhDs have been written about him. Now, Nietzsche's philosophy, too, has been associated with everything from socialism to Marilyn Manson. As I said before, anytime anybody does anything wrong, especially a young person goes out and kills someone or does something, they blame it on Nietzsche. Now, then, what then did Nietzsche write? Let me give you a few smatterings of his writing, just to give you an idea of where he's coming from. And here's Nietzsche. Just give you a few examples here of Nietzsche, just to give you an idea here. What then is truth? A mobile army of metaphors, metonyms, and anthropomorphisms. In short, a sum of human relations which have been enhanced, transposed, and embellished for which seems firm, canonical, and obligatory to a people. Truths are illusions about which one has forgotten that that is what they are. In other words, there are real, no truth. Truths are just what we make the truths to be. In another place, he says, in an age of crude primeval cultures, man believed that in dreams he got to know another real world. Here is the origin of all metaphysics. In other words, it was just people had dreams, and so they thought there was another world, and so they came up with this idea that there was another existence, and hence God, and so on and so forth. And here's another quote. Here's again where you don't know whether you're reading the mad one or the brilliant one. Here's a quote people just love. Man should be educated for war and women for the recreation of the warrior. All else is folly. Okay? And then he goes on. There's another. You're getting an idea here. Let me read you another quote from him. Let me find that here. Where he talks about, he talks about Christians and he lambasts Christians, and he says here, talk about Christians. Not their love of men, but the impotence of their love of men keeps Christians of today from burning us. And then one last one I want to read, which people just totally go nuts over. He's talking about Jesus here. And he says, talk about Jesus. He says, believe it, my brothers, he died too early. He himself would have recanted his teachings had he lived to my age. He was noble enough to recant. Okay, now I can go on and on and on and give you some, you know, more quotes about Nietzsche and so on. But the point is, you get an idea here. You get an idea here that, another place. Oh, I want to remember another one. He said he couldn't believe there was a God, because if there was a God, he couldn't help but think he was God. Okay? Now, even amid the smattering of this stuff, you come to the essence of what Nietzsche thought. And this is, I think, the important point. And here's where, in a sense, I think Nietzsche was right. I don't agree with his premise, but to a certain degree, his conclusions are correct. And the bottom line of Nietzsche is this. Christianity is no longer viable. People don't believe in the Christian God anymore. Therefore, why hang on to the Christian morality? In other words, people don't really believe in Christianity anymore. Society has thrown that out. So if you throw out Christian morality, if you throw out the Christian religion, why not throw out Christian morality as well? Let me read you here another quote here where he makes that point. And I think it's, I think his point here, even if you don't agree, he said they have gotten rid of the Christian God, but now feel obligated to cling all more firmly to the Christian morality. What is, when one gives up Christian belief, one thereby deprives himself of the right to Christian morality. And I think he had a point there. If you think about it, if you're not going to believe in the Christian God, if you're not going to believe it anymore, why cling to it? See, Nietzsche made an interesting point. He talked about the fact that, he talked about Christianity as a slave morality, that people who were weak, so they made up this idea, well, you know, be kind to those who are weaker to you and love your enemies and so on and so forth. And in other words, it's a morality of the weak. Now, this is nothing new. The ancient Greeks, Pythagoras, talked about this and so on and so forth. And he even brought up the question of ancient Israel. He said, you got this Hebrew nation, this tiny group of people. You know, Israel was never a major empire. And this small little nation of people. And how did they ultimately come, their moral codes, to dominate the whole Western world today? I mean, it's the Ten Commandments, the Jewish Ten Commandments, and on and on and on. How did this come to dominate the world? And he basically argued that, in a sense, even though Rome had overcome and had beaten Israel militarily, in the end, Israel ultimately beat Rome because their morality continued. Their morality continued on. And again, I think he's got a point there with that. So here's where Nietzsche is, so basically the gist of what he's saying, is that you've thrown out the Christian God, why are you hanging on to Christian morality? And if you reject the whole idea of God, you know, then throw it all out. And again, I think he makes a point. I want you to listen to this quote here. Listen to this quote where he says, and this is the last one on this one, where he talks about the Christian God, throwing out the Christian God. And he says, well, basically, what did I do with it? I can't find it. But basically, whatever. The gist of the quote I remember is, he's gone beyond morality. He's gone beyond the old Christian law tablets. He says, we don't need these anymore. Smash them. Get rid of them all. And again, I say, if you think about the basic idea, if you throw out the Christian God, then why not sever yourself from the Christian morality? He says, you can't sever one from the other. This is a crucial strain of his thought. And if you really, really think about it, I think it makes sense. All the stuff about loving your neighbors, loving your enemy, treating others as you would. Now, that's especially helpful if you're at the bottom of the heap. If your neighbor's stronger than you, if your neighbor's more powerful than you, happens to be a great morality for you if you're on the bottom. Nietzsche wanted none of this. He wanted a new morality. And again, I think this makes a lot of sense. This is where he comes up with his idea of the Superman. You've heard this idea of somebody who throws out all the old moral codes and makes up his own code and blah, 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 gets rid of ideas of good and evil and makes his own up all along and, you know, he's got to be above mercy and compassion and so on and so forth. And I think that's where ultimately you get this Nazi stuff, that the Nazis supposedly used that stuff. Well, they did use that. Now, with this in mind, I want to read you probably one of the most famous quotes of Nietzsche. I've read it on here before. We've looked at it, but I want to look at it a little more carefully. I want to get a little more details. It's called The Madman. And it's from his book, The Gay Science. And it's not gay as we understand today. Some call it The Happy Science. As I said, I've read it before. Now, I want you to listen carefully. And listen carefully to the context. Because it's very important in what we've been saying. And he talks about a madman who grabs a lantern. All right, well, listen now. Listen to the quote. And think about it. Think about it in the context of what I'm saying now about Nietzsche. We don't believe in the Christian God anymore. We don't believe in any of that stuff, supposedly. And therefore, why are we clinging to all this? Have you not heard of the madman who lit a lantern in the bright morning and ran into the marketplace and cried incessantly, I seek God, I seek God? As many of those who did not believe in God were standing around just then, he provoked much laughter. Why, did he get lost, said one? Did he lose his way like a child, said another? Or is he hiding? Is he afraid of us? Has he gone on a voyage or immigrated? Thus they yelled and laughed. The madman jumped into their midst and pierced them with his glances. So he starts out. Where is God? They're mocking it. This is the age of secularism. This is the age of modernism. This is the age of reason. They don't need all that ancient religious stuff anymore. They don't think they need that God anymore. So that's why they're mocking and laughing at him. Okay, where is God? He cried. This is the madman now. Where is God? He cried. I shall tell you, we have killed him. You and I, all of us are his murderers. But how have we done this? How are we able to drink up the sea? Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What did we do when we enchained the earth from its sun? Where is it moving now? Where are we moving now? Away from all suns. Are we not plunging continually backward, sideways, forward, in all directions? Is there no up or down left? Are we not straying us through an infinite nothing? See, what he's saying here, but it's basically in the Enlightenment, between Darwin, between Freud and so forth, people rejected the God of the past. There's no more religion. There's no more transcendence. And he's seeing, what do we have? We're straying through an infinite nothingness. We're plunging back and forth. He saw that by throwing out the Christian God, by throwing out, they've unmoored themselves from any kind of absolutes. There's no absolutes. There's nothing, you know, it's just what you make and so on. And he saw that was all. So he's got this beautiful imagery. You know, are we not plunging in all directions because we've cut it all loose? It's all gone when you throw out the Christian God. See, there's two views of the world, basically, that people have. You've got, you know, this transcendental view, this idea that there's something greater than us, there's something above us, there's something higher than us, a God where morality and all these things come from. And then you've got pretty much the view that modern science has taken, and it's this purely materialistic view. See, Nietzsche saw this coming. He saw this idea of God and all this transcendence was going away. He didn't believe it. And he said, what are you going to have in its place? And the ancient Socratics just said pre-Socratic said there's Adam in the void. Adam's in the void. That's it. That's all that they've got. And see, Nietzsche's saying, we've accepted the latter. We've accepted just this materialistic scientific view of the world. And what's the result? We've wiped away the horizon. We've unchanged the earth. He's seen the consequences of this loss of faith. He sees that the thing that has moored the world to its place, faith in God and absolute truth in Jesus, in the Bible, it's all been wiped away. So now what? Where does that leave us? As he says, he goes on. He says, do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? Must not lanterns be lit in the morning? Do we not hear anything yet of the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? Wow. Wow, that's heavy. Do we not smell anything yet of God's decomposition? God's to decompose. God is dead. God remains dead. And we have killed him. How shall we, the murderers of all murderers, comfort ourselves? See, this is the foundation of that famous saying, Nietzsche's famous saying, that God, you know, this famous statement, God is dead. Time magazine years ago had a cover article, is God dead? And Nietzsche's point is we've destroyed the foundation of our morals, the foundation of our understanding of our origins, the foundation of our understanding where we're going. It was all rooted in God, this God that we have killed. And that's his point on all this. Now, let me read you a little more. Let me finish up here, this quote. He said, what festivals of atonement, what sacred games shall we have to invent? Is not the greatness of this deed too great for us? Must not we ourselves become gods simply to seem worthy of it? There has never been a greater deed, and whoever will be born after us, for the sake of this deed, he will be part of a higher history than all history hitherto. The point is we saw the implications of this. He saw how, apocal this was to completely throw out the foundations of everything. And what do we have in its place? And he's trying to argue the Superman and so on and so forth and his whole thing. And again, I don't think he, the problem with Nietzsche was, even though he was able to tear things down, he didn't give us anything in its place. And I can remember a number of years ago, I was with a friend of mine in Holland. And I wasn't a believer in God or anything then. And yet I wondered, is there a God? I pretty much bought the Nietzsche package. You know, there is no God. There is no transcendence. There is nothing greater than above us. All we've got is what we have here. And I bought that. Yet I still wondered, was there something else? Was there a God? Was there something? I remember I was with a friend of mine in Holland, a Dutch friend of mine. And I can remember once I'm saying to, he said, well, I don't care if there is a God, great. If there's not, it makes no difference to me. And I was appalled. I said, I grabbed him. His name was Singer. I said, Singer, are you crazy? If I thought there was a God, if I thought there was some transcendence, if I thought there was something greater than what we have here, said, nothing would be the same. Nothing would be the same. See, Nietzsche saw that because there's a God, here's our morality, here's our sense of right and wrong, here's our sense of who we are, and everything. Everything stemmed from our belief in God. And then if you don't believe in that God, you wipe it all out and you're left on your own. And he came up with this Ubermensch, Superman, and all that stuff. And I mean, how much good, you know, here's a Superman. How did he die? He died insane, wrapping his arms around somebody who was beating on a horse. So it didn't work so well for him. So I guess the point in all this is, as I, with my friend, I'm saying, if I thought there was a God, nothing would ever be the same. Everything would have to be different. And so in the end, I think the legacy that Nietzsche has left us is, okay, if you accept Nietzsche, you throw it all out. And if you don't believe in the Christian God, you don't believe in transcendence, you don't believe in an afterlife, you don't believe in the morals of Christianity, okay, that's fine. But what do you put in its place? That's the great question. If you've thrown it out, what do you have left? And if I look at Nietzsche's life, if I look at the way he lived, how he lived, and ultimately how he died, it's obvious he was good at tearing things down, but he gave us no answers. So we've got, though, to find our answers from somewhere.